Okay, number 27. Sarvanindriya karmani prana karmani chapare atma samyama yogyagno jhuvati jnana dipite. Others who are interested in achieving self-realization through control of the mind and senses offer the functions of all the senses and of the life breath, prana, as oblations into the fire of the controlled mind. Prabhupada comments, the yoga system conceived by Patanjali is referred to herein. In the Yoga Sutra of Patanjali, the soul is called Pratyakatma and Parakatma. As long as the soul is attached to sense enjoyment, it is called Parakatma. But as soon as the soul becomes detached from such sense enjoyment, it is called Pratyakatma. So, it seems that parag and pratyag, something like this, the main words are rag and tyag. Right? Because if he's attached, he's rag, ragi. And if he's detached, he's tyagi. So Prabhupada describes something about the Patanjali system there, about the various pranas. You can look in the third canto, chapter 6, text 9, 369, and you'll find the 10 pranas and their description. Huh? The pranas. So there's prana, apana, samana, vayana, udana, and nag, kurma, krikar, devadatta, and dhananjaya. We'll describe them quickly. Prana means what you're breathing in. The oxygen goes to the blood, into the lungs. So that's inhaling. Then the apana is the air you're exhaling. And when you're excreting, any air that goes out from the body is apana. When the woman gives birth, it's the apana which pushes the child out. When you're passing air, that's apana. When you're excreting, right, then it's that air which pushes out the stool from the body. Then samana, which is kind of... Samana means like it equalizes or balances all the food and liquids that are in the body. Anything you eat, the samana air, like in the stomach, kind of makes everything nice. It regulates everything. It distributes equally the digestive juices throughout the stomach. Samana, everything's equal. Then udana is at the throat and it separates the liquids from the solids as it goes down. They say that if somebody grabs you and chokes you, you can die if the udana air is stopped in your body. So this udana is in the throat. If somebody's choking someone, it's the udana air which is being stopped. You have another air when you yawn. That's the next one. Devadanta, that's letter. Then there's vyana, which is throughout the entire body, just helps in bodily movements. Yeah, throughout the whole body. When you're walking and you're dancing and sitting. So these are the five gross airs, and the five more subtle airs are now being described. Naga is the air which opens your eyes and your mouth when you speak. And then kurma means the air of contraction. Like a turtle withdraws its senses into this shell. Kurma. So similarly, the body, especially the skin, has a kind of energy of contraction. When one gets old, then that air dissipates, and so then the body starts to sag, you know, in the neck. You see older people, their skin kind of gets real loose and hangs down. There's wrinkles in the face and like that, because the air of kurma is now leaving the body. So the thing which keeps your skin and your body looking young, and your face, the skin on your face and body like tight, that's the kurma air. So someone can actually control that air. They can remain young looking even when they're like 70. So when people are healthy or yogis, they look very young, but they may be very old because they're controlling these pranas. Then there's krikar, which creates appetite. When you get hungry, that's the krikara. Krikara air. And also when you cough. Then there's Devadatta air, which is the air of yawning when you're relaxing, like this gentleman here was just yawning. It helps you to make you feel relaxed. And you'll notice that when one person yawns, other people will yawn also. Because it makes, I also feel relaxed. It's kind of like the energy of that prana kind of is in the air and it affects the other people. It's true, right? Then the last but not least is Dhananjaya, which means that the air of maintenance, somehow it maintains or sustains the body. So, and this is the last air that leaves the body at the time of death. All the nine leave, and the Dhananjaya air remains there, and it decomposes the corpse, the body, and it makes the body smell bad. When there's a bad smell from the body, it's the Dhananjaya air which is decomposing the body, it's making the body rot. So then there's a very bad smell that comes from that. Interesting, yes? So when you do this Patanjali yoga, which is yam, niyam, asana, pranayam, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. So, you know, the first two are regulations, vidhi and nisheda. Then you have the asana, you're sitting, and then you do pranayama. So the pranayama controls the airs of the body, and it allows the person to control his senses, his eating, his sleeping, and his mind is controlled by the pranas. All of the senses are controlled by the pranas, actually. That's why fasting is beneficial. Anyway, I'll try to explain this. All the senses are controlled by the pranas. So when you fast, you are controlling the pranas in your body. Fasting helps to control the pranas in your body. So when you're controlling the pranas, then you can control the senses. Let's put it that way. When you fast, your pranas become weakened. And so therefore the senses become weakened. And easier for you to control. When the senses are very strong, they're like kind of pushing towards the sense objects with some force. But when they're weakened, by the pranas being weakened, which control the senses, then it's easier to control the senses. There's not so much pushing for the sense objects. And another way to control the pranas is to do pranayama. That's why the yogi does pranayama. It helps him to control, especially the mind, because he's preparing to do dharana and dhyana so that he can attain samadhi. But the pranayama, you'll see, is before pratyahara, so it also helps to control the senses. Pratyahara means to control the senses. So doing the pranayama helps to control all the senses of the body. The appetite and everything. And especially the mind. So then once the mind is calm by pranayama, then it can do dharana and begin to concentrate and go into dhyana and meditation. So this is a mechanical process for fixing the mind. It works, but it's mechanical. And to do that kind of yoga, which is an inactive yoga system, is difficult, as you know. And later we'll discuss that in chapter 6, all the details of that yoga system, or at least to some extent. Okay, text 28. Dravya yagyastapo yagya yoga yagyastatapale svadhyaya jnana yagyascha yataya samshita vrataha. Having accepted strict vows, some, what that means, samshita vrataha, right? So all of these are called yatayaha. They're all people who are trying to do these. They're endeavoring for saṅkṣita vrataḥ. They've taken some strict vows. So, having accepted strict vows, some become enlightened by sacrificing their possessions, dravayagya. And others by performing severe austerities, tapo-yagya. By practicing the yoga of eightfold mysticism, yoga-yagya. Or by studying the Vedas to advance transcendental knowledge, svadhyaya, jnana yagyas. Purport. These sacrifices may be fitted into various divisions. There are persons who are sacrificing their possessions in the form of various kinds of charity. In India, the rich mercantile community or princely orders open various kinds of charitable institutions like dharmashala, anakshetra, atithishala, Anatthalaya and Vidyapith. Anatthalaya, what is that? Without a lord. orphanage, yeah, right. No lord there. In other countries, too, there are many hospitals, old age homes, and similar charitable foundations meant for distributing food, educational, and medical treatment free to the poor. All these charitable activities are called Dravimaya Yagya. So that's like the Karma Yagya. And the demigod one is also Karma Yagya. Yes. There are others who, for higher elevation in life or promotion to higher planets within the universe, voluntarily accept many kinds of austerities, such as Chandrayana and Chaturmasya. This is also Karma Yagya, because they're trying to go to the higher planets. You know, the Chandrayana, I think it's in Manusamhita. The person On the first day, he eats 15 mouthfuls of food. Then on the second day, 14. And then on the third day, 13. Until he goes to the middle of the month, where he doesn't eat anything, or eats one mouthful. And then again, he starts with two mouthfuls on the 16th day. And 17th day, three mouthfuls. And then when he works his way up to 15 mouthfuls again at the end of the month. So I guess on the Purnima, that's when he has one mouthful or he fasts completely. I forget exactly how it was, but it's like this. This is a tapoyagi. And there's another one, I forget the name of it, like kritcha, some Sanskrit term of Chaturmasya, where there's in 12 days, the first 3 days, he eats three mouthfuls of food. I forget how that one goes. There's a kind of Chaturmasya thing where the first day he eats in the morning. Oh yeah, he eats once a day. Okay, not one mouthful of food, but he eats once a day only in the morning for the first 3 days. And the next 3 days he eats once a day in the evening. Like this. So then the next 3 days he does something else, which I forget. And then on the last 3 days he fasts completely. That's another kind of tapoyagi. So just to give you an idea what it means. Then, okay, Prabhupada also mentions on Chaturmasya the person doesn't shave, which is tough, you know, because it's so itchy to have a beard. It's pretty horrible. It's so uncomfortable. And then when you eat, it gets into your beard. And when you're bathing, you know, so it's hard to clean yourself properly. Your hair is long, your beard. It's most hairy. Or he does not eat certain foods, does not eat twice in a day, he does not leave home. Such sacrifice of comforts of life is called tapomaya yoga. Still, there are others who engage themselves in different kinds of mystic yogas like Pantanjali system, or merging into the Absolute, or Hatha yoga or Ashtanga yoga for particular cities or perfections. Actually, Ashtanga yoga generally is divided into two. There's like those who want mystic perfections, it's more like karma, like karmis. And those who want merging, they're more like jnanis. So according to the Ashtanga yogi, what he wants, he's either more like a karmi or a jnani. That's why it's not considered like a major category like karma, jnana, and bhakti. These are the three major. Yoga is in there, but it's like it's either one or the other, or maybe even a combination, according to his mentality. The yogi is either like a karmi or he's like a jnani. Some travel to sanctified place of pilgrimage. All these practices are called yoga yagya. And there are others who engage themselves in the studies of the Vedas, Upanishads or Vedanta Sutra or Sankhya. These are called svadhyaya yagyas, or engagement in the sacrifice of studies. All these yogis are faithfully engaged in different types of sacrifice and are seeking a higher status of life. Krishna consciousness, however, is different from these because it is direct service to the Supreme Lord Krishna. We're tired now. If you feel tired in the class, it means it would probably be good if you took a nap before you came to the class. Or you don't eat in the morning, or you just eat fruit, something like that. If you're struggling to stay awake, then you should make an adjustment. Okay? Most everybody's, you're a little tired today. Someone else who was yesterday was somebody out there. I remember someone was sleeping outside. That's why they sit out there. Huh? You're okay today, Sankirtan? Gee. Sometimes he gets a little tired. If you're eating grains in the morning, then you should know that, because grains mean sleeping. So you may consider eating some fruit or something. Okay, next. Apane juvati pranam, prane panam tatapare, pranapan kati vrudya, pranayam parayayanaha, apare niyatarara, pranam praneshu juhati. Still others who are inclined to the process of breath restraint to remain in trance practice by offering the movement of the outgoing breath into the incoming and the incoming breath into the outgoing, and thus at last remain in trance, stopping all breathing. Others, curtailing the eating process, offer the outgoing breath into itself as a sacrifice. So, Prabhupada writes, this system of yoga for controlling the breathing process is called pranayama. And in the beginning, it is practiced in the Hatha Yoga system through different sitting postures. All of these processes are recommended for controlling the senses and for advancing in spiritual realization. So he discusses the details. You don't really have to know that, but there's the Puraka and Rechaka. Right? So the Puraka, it seems, is the outgoing breath, and Rechaka is the ingoing breath. And when you kind of hold them, yeah, then it's kumbhaka yoga. When you stop the breathing. Somehow, I was never very interested in this stuff. Okay. Prabhupada mentions about Krishna prasadam. Because the last one says that the person curtailing, he stops eating and he just offers his breath into itself. So, you know, that's not so easy to do. You stop eating. So anyway, Prabhupada says the practice of reduced eating is automatically done when one eats only Krishna prasadam. Reducing the eating process is very helpful in the matter of sense control. And without sense control, there's no possibility of getting out of material entanglement. Sometimes you notice if the prasadam is very nice, it's cooked, not opulent, but it's tasty, then you can eat a little and feel satisfied. But if it's not so tasty, you keep packing it in because your tongue's not happy, so at least the belly should be happy like this. So then you end up eating more than you should, just because you're trying to get some satisfaction. But if the prasadam is cooked very nicely, you don't need so much. And sometimes you'll notice this, like on some occasion where maybe you're on a yatra and you haven't eaten, somebody just gives you a little maha, maybe one puri and a little sabji, and you eat that and you think, wow, I'm satisfied. Has that ever happened to any of you? Right? Yeah. Huh? If it's too opulent, and if you're like a sense enjoyer, then you'll get carried away. That's a different thing. But if it's tasty, then you feel satisfied with less. Yeah. Especially if it's maha prasadam, right, from the Lord's plate. That has a special potency. You can eat a little and just somehow you feel satisfied. Text 30. Sarve pyete yagya vido yagya kshapita kalmasaha yagya shishamrita bhujo yanti brahma sanatanam. All these performers who know the meaning of sacrifice become cleansed of sinful reactions. And having tasted the nectar of the results of sacrifice, they advance toward the supreme eternal atmosphere. So there's a primary result and a secondary result being referred to here. The primary result is Yanti Brahma Sanatana. He goes to the eternal spiritual atmosphere. Okay? And the secondary result is the word Amrita, Yagya Shishamrita Bhujo, which means he enjoys. Tasted, and they're enjoying the amrit of the sacrifice. And that means a secondary result, which indicates mundane enjoyment and opulence, and or mystic cities, etc. So these are a lower kind of result from performing yajna. And of course, or unfortunately, we could say, a lot of people go for the secondary, lower result when they do yajna. They're looking for some enjoyment, opulence, or mystic powers. Even when sometimes when they sing bhajans. Give me a car and a house and a color TV. Jai Jagadish Hari. Jai Jagadish Hari. Jai Jagadish Hari. Prabhupada comments. From the foregoing explanation of different types of sacrifice, namely sacrifice of one's possessions, study of the Vedas, or philosophical doctrines, and performance of yoga, it is found that the common aim of all is to control the senses. Sense gratification is the root cause of material existence. Therefore, unless and until one is situated on the platform apart from sense gratification, there is no chance of being elevated to the eternal platform of full knowledge, bliss, and light. This platform is the eternal atmosphere, or Brahman atmosphere. All the above sacrifices help one to become cleansed of the sinful reactions of material existence. By this advancement in life, not only does one become happy and opulent in this life, but also at the end, he enters into the eternal kingdom of God, either merging into the impersonal Brahman or associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. So Prabhupada's mentioning both of these primary and secondary results. He says you can get both of them. So you can live opulently and enjoy, and at the end, you can merge or, you know, go to Goloka Vrindavan. Right? And merge in there with the cowherd boys or with the gopis in the Rasa Leela and dance and sing like that. That merging. not merging into the cowherd boy himself, but into the group. You go into the group and you, Krishna's in the middle and you're all around him. Or in the Rasa Leela, Radha and Krishna in the middle and all around. So they enter into the Rasa Leela. Text 31. Nayam lokosti yaksya kutanya kuru sattamaha. O best of the crude dynasty, without sacrifice, one can never live happily on this planet or in this life. What then of the next? So, if you don't perform yajna, then there's a dosha there, a fault, which means you get karma, you get sin. The Lord is explaining this. But there is no prescribed duty in this world other than yajna. Everything else is vikarma. So there's no karma in this world other than yajna. Everything else is vikarma. Prabhupada writes, whatever form of material existence one is invariably ignorant of his real situation. In other words, existence in the material world is due to the multiple reactions to our sinful lives. The human form of life is the only loophole by which one may get out of this entanglement. So in order to get out of this entanglement, one has to perform yajna. Why? Because the material world is a complex entanglement in reaction and action and reaction, like a maze, like a banyan tree, like Krishna says later. Multiple reactions, multifaceted reactions, like a mouse in a maze. You know what a maze is? Kind of like a trap, right? Caught in a maze. It's just, he goes this way, he goes that way.
Gets lost.
There's a block, he goes this way. And he goes around. He doesn't know how to get out of this thing. He just goes around and around and around. That's cool. I mean, we're like mice running around in a maze. They get entrapped. So the loophole means the way to get out is to perform yajna. And that is done in the human form of life. So human life is meant for advancing in spiritual life. And the process of advancing is yajna. Now this is the last verse in this section. Two more lines. Evam bahuvida yajna vitata brahmano mukhe karmajam viditan sarvam evam gyatva vimokshase. All these different types of sacrifice are approved by the Vedas, and all of them are born of different types of work. Knowing them as such, you will become liberated. Evam gyatva vimokshase. We become liberated. We read this commentary already. Bahu Vida, yajna, different kinds. And they are enunciated in the Vedas through the mouth of the Lord. Because the Vedas come from the Lord's mouth, right? Brahmano Mukhe. Prabhupada also mentions in the last sentence, this is confirmed by the Lord here from his own mouth. He's referring to this Sanskrit, Brahmano Mukhe. Because he speaks the Shrutis, and then they're disseminated by the Sampradayacharyas, mainly Brahma and his sons, like Shiva, Narada, the Kumaras, and of course Lakshmi Devi. So Brahma and his family, they're the ones who disseminate on behalf of the Lord. But originally, it comes from the Lord's mouth. Okay, let's read the last question. Let's read the last verse. Shreyan dravyamaya yagyaj jnana yagya parantapa sarva karma kilam pata yagye pari samapyate. O chastiser of the enemy, Parantapa, the sacrifice performed in knowledge, jnana yagya, is better than the mere sacrifice of material possessions, drava yagya. After all, O son of Prita, all sacrifices of work culminate in transcendental knowledge, sarvam karma kilam jnane. Parisamapyate. They end up with knowledge. So, yes. Mm. how you want to approach this room. I guess we could read probably. Jnana Yajna was mentioned previously in verse 25 by the word Brahmanagna, or Brahmavna. Jnana Yajna. And the Karmakanda, or the Drava Yajna, was mentioned in verse 4:24 in this Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir. Yes, welcome. 4:24. Anyway, this is mentioned by Bhishma Chakravarti, he's telling like this. Yeah, there may be other places mentioned. So why is the Jnana Yajna better than Drava Yajna? Because the purpose of all yajnas is to attain jnana. So if you're doing Jnana Yajna, then that would be considered better, higher, closer to knowledge. All karma is meant for attaining jnana. And we have a nice verse by Devahuti that I used to know. Maybe I'll quote that later. Yeah, I can't remember that now. Let's read Prabhupada's commentary now. The purpose of all sacrifices is to arrive at the status of complete knowledge and then to gain release from material miseries and ultimately to engage in the loving transcendental service of the Supreme Lord Krishna consciously. So here you see there's karma, jnana, and bhakti. In a sentence, get free from misery. To come to knowledge. Well, okay. Anyway, we can say the purpose of sacrifice is to get knowledge, release from miseries, and to engage in bhakti. Nevertheless, there is a mystery about all these different activities of sacrifice, and one should know this mystery. Sacrifices sometimes take different forms according to the particular faith of the performer. When one's faith reaches the stage of transcendental knowledge, the performer of sacrifices should be considered more advanced than those who simply sacrifice material possessions without such knowledge. For without attainment of knowledge, sacrifices remain on the material platform and bestow no spiritual benefit. Real knowledge culminates in Krishna consciousness, the highest stage of transcendental knowledge. Without the elevation of knowledge, sacrifices are simply material activities or rituals. So, what does it mean, knowledge? Here, it means deliberation on the Supreme, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So without deliberation on the Supreme in your yajna, then it remains just a ritual and it has no real lasting spiritual benefit. It's on the material platform. Deliberation? Thinking of God. There has to be some thought of God in the yajna. When, however, they are elevated to the level of transcendental knowledge, all such activities enter onto the spiritual platform. So in the beginning, the Drava Yajna and or these Karmakanda Yajnas, that they will bring one to Nishkam Karma, and then from that level the person will gradually attain knowledge. So they also have a benefit. But the purpose of them is to get the knowledge. So that's why the Jnana Yajna is considered superior. Depending on differences in consciousness, sacrificial activities are sometimes called karmakanda and sometimes jnanakanda. It is better when the end is knowledge. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that when the goal is spiritual progress, then the karma yogis lose their fruit of materialism and become transcendental. When the goal is spiritual progress, then the karma yogis lose their fruitive materialism and they become transcendental. Spiritual progress has to be there. If someone is just performing a sacrifice, to later get more sense enjoyment. Like people do karma kanda yagyas and they give up some of their wealth and pay some brahmanas to do a yagya. But their purpose is that they can get more money. They're giving a little money to the brahmanas so that they can, their business will increase and so that they will get more money later. That this is not, going to bring them to transcendental knowledge. Because the spiritual progress is not the purpose of why they're doing the yagya. And then it's just a ritual. It's a karma yagya. And they don't get any real spiritual benefit from doing that. But when they have the idea of spiritually progressing or purifying themselves, or especially pleasing God, then that karma yagya, that same yagya, will lose its fruitive ness, its materialisticness, and therefore the person will advance and get knowledge and he'll progress. Then that yagya becomes transcendental. So it all has to do with the intent and the motive or the meditation of the person. Very, very important. And that's why Krishna is telling Arjuna that you can do this, you can fight in this war as a kshatriya and do it as your karma yagya, but you're doing it for spiritual progress. So therefore the fruitiveness is gone, the reactions are gone, and it becomes transcendental. Just like offering, like a Brahmin offering ghee in a fire. Or a jnani sitting in the forest meditating on Brahman. Or the super soul, Paramatma. So if you're thinking of me, right? Krishna told Arjuna that you should fight and think of me. Mam anusmara yudhyacha. Right? You think of me, that's the main thing. Yudhyacha. And you also fight. Main thing is you think of me. And that's what transforms Arjuna's fighting into a yagya, into a sacrifice, into transcendence. Okay. Well, now we have some questions. What's that?
What is this exactly?
Jnana yagya. Well, that's a category of maybe different kinds.
Can it be explained? Like we saw
a specific
brahmacharya is or like that. Swadhyaya is explained by Srila Prabhupada in purport. So what exactly is jnana?
Well, I mean, there's no, it means that the person is doing it for spiritual progress. Because as far as I see, jnana yagya is not mentioned. But I mean, svadhyaya jnana yagya is there. Well, a person could read the Vedas and think that I'd like to go to Svarga. So just studying the Vedas doesn't necessarily mean it's jnana yagya. From what I perceive, then the term refers to when the person is doing it, performing it in knowledge for spiritual progress, as we discussed at the end. Then it makes it a jnana yagya, it makes it transcendental. If the person's not doing it for knowledge, he's just trying to get something more enjoyment, then that's the second, the lower result of performing the sacrifice. And if he has the higher one in mind, then it's considered karma, jnana yajna.
Any kind of sacrifice, but it is in knowledge. That means jnana. Like a brahmachari is performing sacrifice, or
even the demigod worshippers, if they're doing it with knowledge, and they're trying to make spiritual progress, and they realize the demigods are not Brahma, Supreme Brahman, Parabrahma, they realize that they're jivas, they can perform a sacrifice with that mentality for purification, for elevation, for pleasing the Supreme, for spiritual progress, not for material enjoyment. Well, there's a term, drava maya yajna, also. And drava yajna is the ones we mentioned in the commentary, the atithi shala, the dharma shala. When a person, dravya means something material, then he's giving something particularly for some material, something that he... The dravya yajna, or is a karma yajna also, but if it's done just... If it's done for spiritual progress, then it can also come to the level of jnana yajna.
Yeah, that's not my question. So, jnana yajna is any yajna performed in dravya yajna or tapo yajna or yoga yajna or swadhyaya yajna.
That's how I understand it, yeah.
If that is done in knowledge, then it becomes jnana yajna.
That's how I understand it, yeah. Because there's no specific mention of jnana yajna as a specific performance.
So especially in the modern times, many people, they are able to appreciate giving part in organizations like CRY, like Child Relief and Youth. They have such organizations.
What?
CRY.
CRY.
Child Relief and Youth.
Child Relief?
And Youth.
And you. Oh, and you.
Yeah.
CRY.
This is a social welfare organization.
Oh, okay.
So there are many such organizations which are proud of, and people are able to appreciate giving support to such organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And some people even sacrifice a major portion of their salary in giving to such organizations, and they feel a sense of sacrifice and goodness in that. They consider it to be more noble than giving to God and giving to spiritual activities. I had a question.
God has enough money. God has enough money.
Yeah, they have enough money. So, when I speak to them, sometimes they say that this money, if it is misused, say the recipient, first of all, it's completely on a material platform. You know that very well. And besides that, if the recipients are misusing the money by drinking or smoking and things like that, do they also get a share of karma because they have contributed to a wrong cause? Because they say, no, we have given with a good intent. We didn't intend to... That way they say, even sometimes you give to a Brahmana also. Sometimes somebody keeps a shika and looks like a Brahmana. You give him money, but he goes to a movie. So that way, so they argue like this. So how do we... This point of intent, I want to...
It's nice they have a good intent. But even the Christians say that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. So the good intentions... help, but they're not everything. So if the person has no discrimination to actually judge who has proper character and behavior and who's a worthy patra or recipient, candidate to giving his donation to, then it means the person's in ignorance and he's giving charity in ignorance. So then the result is not very good. But if he picks out a good Brahmin or someone who's selfless and pure, and that person's distributing prasad or whatever, then he gets nice benefit. But if the person uses it for buying beaties or a woman or whatever, or drinking or whatever, then he gets part of that karma. Yeah. Doesn't matter if he has a good intention. So that means that, in other words, the onus is on the individual giver. If he has to know, he has to be able to discriminate. Because if he picks the wrong person, he's going to get a bad result. We'll talk a little bit more about that in chapter 17, I believe, about charity. It's an interesting topic. Yeah? You want to speak?
Actually, I have to add a question.
Okay.
A person who is just giving up everything for any social cause, does it necessarily make him Nishkam Karma Yogi? Or he is performing karma or Nishkam Karma?
Well, if he's just giving a part of his income, then it's just sankham. I mean, because if he's... The person has to give all of... whatever he has over his, you know, basic necessities for a higher cause, then it's nishkam. And he has no desire to, you know, get a... you know, a tax break or fame or, you know, anything. Then it's nishkam. Karma.
Then it depends in what category. Sometimes I've heard that, you know, somebody is giving, suppose somebody earns and gives everything to distribute your notebooks to the students, poor people.
Yeah.
Then maybe in next lifetime we'll have a big paper mill.
Like, yeah, but if he's hoping for that, then it's calm. It's not calm.
He's not attached to the fruits because he's giving up everything.
He's attached because he wants something in the future. If he just gives it without any expectation in return, then it's nishkam. And that person, you know, that means that they give really from their heart without hoping or planning. It's not a business deal.
And the first word, Brahma Arpan Brahma Avir, this is the one sentence actually.
24.
Chapter 24. Very simple. But he said, the absolute truth covered by Maya is called matter. Actually, this sentence
right.
I really don't understand.
Right. Well, we talked about that already a little bit. Right? Andantarasta paramam chayantarasta. So in every atom there's the Paramatma. He's the Supreme Absolute. And, oh, where's the actual sentence there?
That is in text 24. Imagita 251 page number.
Yeah.
Around
at the bottom?
Around 14th line in the middle.
14th line in the middle.
That line that
this material veil can be when the jyoti is covered for illusions called material. The word Brahma means spiritual. The Lord is spiritual and the rays of his body are called Brahma Jyoti. He's spiritual effulgence. Everything that exists is situated in that Brahma Jyoti. Almost before that. Let's get to it then. In context. When the jyoti is covered by illusion, maya, or sense gratification, it is called material. Everything that exists is situated in the Brahma jyoti. But when the jyoti is covered by illusion, it is called material. Right? This material veil can be removed at once by Krishna consciousness. Thus, the offering for the sake of Krishna consciousness, the consuming agent of such an offering or contribution, the process of consumption, the contributor, and the results all combined together, Brahman, or the absolute truth. The absolute truth covered by Maya is called matter. Matter, dovetail for the cause of the absolute truth, regains its spiritual quality. So in other words, when there is illusion, he's talking about Maya's illusion, and everything's in the Brahma Jyoti. And when that Brahma Jyoti is veiled, is covered by the material world, by illusion, then it is or sense gratification. That means the mentality of enjoying. Then it is called material. So everything is spiritual. Sarvam kalavidam brahma. So when you use it for God, then it's spiritual. And when you use it with the illusory mentality of enjoyment, then it becomes matter. Just like the microphone. It's spiritual because we're using it for Bhagavad Katha, for Bhakti Shastri. And if you give it to someone on the street and they sell it or whatever, whoever uses it, and they use it for a rock and roll concert or whatever, then it becomes matter. But right now, we're using it in the proper way. We see it as the energy of God. That's what this means.
When something confuses me, actually, what happens, the Prabhupada gives the difference between spirit and matter, that spirit is the cause of matter, not the matter is cause of spirit.
Right.
And he gives the example of lemon tree, and so many lemons can be produced, and tree remains the same.
Or the,
and so many things he says. So I really want to understand what is the difference between spirit and matter. That's a basic question coming back. Because if they both are same, then why there is so much fight is going on with scientists when we are life comes from life, you know? Body just fighting, you know, so many things. So what is the, if they both are same, like we had a discussion long, 3-4 classes back, then matter is also conscious, but it's not manifested. That's what you were, something like you were telling. It's very much like mountain you were saying. And Dormant, it's not...
What's dormant?
Life is dormant, man. You said every super soul has also a soul.
Each and every atom has a super soul is present. Mm-hmm. Like the mountains are also, the rocks are...
Okay. This little bit... I feel a little tired to try to discuss this, but I'll try. Everything is spiritual because everything comes from Krishna. You know, it's like for Krishna, if you look at your thumb, there's the hard part and the soft part. So the hard part is not it's the nail, it's not alive, but still it's growing. It's actually matter. You just cut it off and it's dead, but actually it's growing, you know. So for Krishna, it's like matter and spirit are the same thing because it's his energy, but it's apara and para. So the apara is inferior and para is superior. But the apara is, it's bhinna prakriti, it's some slight separation because the consciousness is not manifest there. So there's some difference, but then there's also, it's, you know, simultaneously different and non-different. From Krishna's point of view, it's all his energy, right? But even he says that he gives it two different names, para and apara. And one is direct, his energy, and the other one is bhinna prakriti. It's a kind of separated energy. So, you know, this statement here that when that absolute truth is covered, not Krishna, he can't be covered, but when you, and the sun can't be covered, but when you put the clouds there, for you, it's covered, right? So you're covering the absolute truth with the illusion of you thinking that you're God and that you're the enjoyer. So in that way, you're covering the absolute truth, and then therefore everything under that illusion, that illusory cloud, that is material, only due to the illusion. And as soon as you see whatever that thing is, the microphone, the book, in connection with God, that it comes from Him, then it's spiritual. So everything becomes spiritual. When a pure devotee sees a tree, or a rock, or water, then he thinks of Krishna. Because he sees this comes from Krishna. Then he thinks of God. So it's spiritual. He sees it as spiritual. So it depends on the consciousness of the person. Like from Krishna, Krishna is the most Krishna conscious person. Yeah. So from his viewpoint, everything's spiritual. So when we become Krishna conscious, everything is spiritual. But when we want to enjoy, then there's a cloud of illusion, and everything under that cloud becomes matter. And that's what this statement. It's not that the absolute truth is weaker than Maya, but for us, it becomes covered. And therefore it's called matter.
One more question about the chanting, meditation. When we were explaining the Astanga Yoga, so there, the stage come of dhyana actually. So you were telling that the pranayama helps the person to control his mind and senses.
Mm-hmm.
So when we are doing our chanting Hare Krishna, it's also mantra meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So this kind of pranayama are recommended by some acharyas, or whether it's helpful. It certainly will be helpful as far as I can understand the description which you gave. Because now mind just goes crazy when we try to chant our rounds. So if these kind of things, whether somebody has recommended it or what's your opinion about it, if somebody wants to do a little bit.
It can be done. We should accept anything which is favorable. So if it helps us, then we can do it. But if a person's going to, you know, do an hour of pranayama, and then he only chants 8 rounds in the morning, then it's not favorable. If he does 5 minutes and it helps him throughout all of his rounds, then maybe he can do that. There's some scope for yoga, not as the ultimate process for self-realization, but as a means or aid for the bhakti process, it's possible. And it's good for health, too. And Prema Pradeep describes this by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So you can look in that and meditate on this topic. There's some scope. Depends on the individual. Yeah.
Okay, just like in addition to Raisanthu's question, any activity we do, and it's like giving a charity or helping somebody, but that person is using the wrong intention, it gives a reaction to this person also. Then how nishkam karma can lead one free? Because somebody is helping other people, like he's not giving. Whole time he's been a road self, he's given to help other people to say cure the disease and all this, and those people are engaging in sense gratification like that. Then how this person will be free from reaction?
Well, that's why it's better to give to the Lord. You know, for, because on the material plane there's people, a lot of people are always going to be taking some part of that contribution. But if you're doing it a yajna, then it won't be misused. And then you give some donation to the brahmanas also. That's also beneficial. So, I mean, nishkam karma generally is Bhagavad Arpit nishkam karma. So the Lord's not going to misuse the money. Right? You buy something for him. You can bring, that's why people, they bring bags of rice and things like that, because they know that's not going to be misused. That's good. Or they buy mukut, or they bring flowers, or ghee, and like this. These things are going to be directly used for the deity worship. In the past, you know, they had, yajna was more, so the emphasis. So then when they saw that there was pakayagyas, lots of ghee, gold, the brahmanas were good, and, you know, so then they could bring articles for them. They bring wood or ghee or like that. When you give money, then you're always taking a chance. Then you should make sure. Then you have to use your discrimination to make sure that everyone's honest.
What is the difference between Nishkam Karma Yoga and Bhagavat Arpit Nishkam Karma? just the same or?
No, it's different because when the person's given to God, then it's better.
No, yoga means to connect to God, so therefore I was confused with these two
words. Well, it means that the person may have the idea of Paramatma or Brahma. He may not have a very clear understanding, but Bhagavad Arpita means to Krishna, Ram, Narayan, like this.
One more, here you are telling that any yajna one does without knowledge, it's Mr. Prabhupada is mentioning just like a karmic karma, normal activity like that. So here, like, it is told that suppose somebody is taking prasad, then it's just an activity, if not taking it as a prasad, just we are giving prasad to somebody else also, to beggar or like that, or somebody, sometimes we are also not conscious by having prasad, just take it and eat it without thinking really it's a prasad. So it's just a normal activity or.
Not quite. It's not a normal activity because it's still prasadam. So even if you take it, even if you give it to somebody who doesn't know it's prasadam, he gets benefit, right? And if a devotee forgets that he's taking prasadam, then he still gets some benefit, some purification, but he doesn't get the full benefit. It's kind of like prasad abhas. Like Namabhas.
Why this question came is we say that the grahasthas, they sacrifice the sense object into senses.
Yeah.
So here the prasad is there, which is given to the tongue.
Yeah.
Like that. So if it is not proper deliberation, then the Prabhupada writes the sacrifices are simply material activities. Means if it is not done for any spiritual elevation.
All the yogas can be seen in the material or in the spiritual way, depending on the mentality. So if the grihasthas are performing their activities with some of their restrictions for pleasing God, then they get a greater benefit. To the degree that there's deliberation on the Supreme, to that degree, there's benefit from the yoga. Let him ask a question. He had him ask. <her. coughs>
You are what contribution and consuming agent of grihasthas and brahmachari? You told about vanaprastha and sannyasa and about kshatriyas and brahmanas are given, and vaishyas and shudras. What are contribution? Agent and consuming
it. Well, Krishna didn't tell us that. I'm not better than Krishna, how can I say? If Krishna didn't even tell it, how can I tell?
Grihasthas, the object, the contribution agent is objects of senses and consuming agent is senses. And if they are in
for which one? For the grihastha.
And they are in different varnas, then they will be having two types of yajna, you can understand this. Like they are kshatriya and they are brahmanas.
Basically the same principle will apply to all of them, whatever varna they are. Same principle. The brahmanas will have on the higher level, higher end of the scale, more generally they'll be more selfless and more sense control, and they'll be more directed towards the Supreme. And as you go down, then the people will be less sense control and less reminded of God when they're performing their yoga. Of course, there's very materialistic Brahmins too. Some of them are really selfish. You know, Karmakanda Brahmins, Smarta Brahmins. They can also be very materialistic, and there could be a Shudra who's really pure and selfless. But in general, the tendency is like that. You have a Brahmin body because you were very pious in your last birth. And the modes are higher. Generally, the person's quite, controlling the senses and the mind and austerities and being clean is natural for him. Studying the Vedas, it's very natural. And being simple. But the other persons, they have to try harder to do those things. But they can do it too.
They have two types of, like a Grihastha, he has one type of sacrifice, like a Brahmana, he has another type of sacrifice.
Well, of course they have different karmas, or, Swadharma in Brahmanashram. But it depends. The principle there is that they're offering their senses their sense objects into the fire of the senses. And all of the grihasthas do that. Because they all have wives. And they all have sex. And they have to. So they're enjoying their senses. But in a regulated way.
Yeah.
But you had a chance already. Somebody else then. Go ahead, somebody.
Test 19 and 20.
You told that these descriptions are of Visham Karmi Yogi. Descriptions are wrong, but with the way that where Krishna is mentioning here that those whose every endeavor is devoted to sense gratification, in text 19 and 20 also, abandoning all attachment to the result of their activities, ever satisfied, independent. It looks like, how can the person who is not a pure devotee exhibit this? Guru Goswami says, Anya Vilashita Shunyam. All desires are given up.
Mm-hmm.
So here, whose every endeavor is devoid of desire for sense gratification. The translation itself, 4.19.
Yeah.
So it looks like a pure devotional platform. I don't understand how you are referring to Islam terminology.
Well, we have to look at the context. We're not talking about bhakti, we're talking about jnana, karma and jnana. That's the first point. Then we look at the commentaries. The acharyas say that the subject of karma is now being explained from 19 to 24 in these five verses. I mean, it doesn't say bhakti agni dagda karmanam. It says jnana agni dagda karmanam. So, yeah, we're talking about this person. In 20, this is the sadhaka. He's trying to give up all attachment to the fruit of his work. He's trying to become self-satisfied. And he doesn't depend on other people for his maintenance. Yeah, that's the understanding. That's the sadhaka. But in text 21 to 23, the person who's perfected in his karma yoga, nishkam karma yoga, is being mentioned. So it's not talking about a devotee, it's talking about the nishkam karma yogi. If someone's nishkam, that means he's not, whatever he does, he's not trying to enjoy it. So all of his endeavors are without the hankering for sense gratification. He's in the mode of goodness, and he's a very religious person. He could be also Bhagavad Arpit Nishkam Karma Yogi. But he hasn't gotten bhakti yet. But he's on a very selfless platform. What's that?
Can completely give up sense gratification or the desire for sense gratification without taking to bhakti.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Just like there are mukta purushas on Mahalok, Janalok, and Tapalok. And, they're like jnanis. They're like, some of them are Brahma jnanis, some of them are, yogis. And they're Mukta Purush, they're above the modes of nature. Because when you get above Indraloka, then those people are advanced, they're above the modes. They don't have any kama. Otherwise they would be with Indra and the dancing girls there, you know. But when you get to Mahalok, Janalok, Tapalok, those planets, they don't destroy it at the day of Brahma. They maintain. They live longer. And they're all God conscious. They're all doing some tapas or dhyana. They're all mukta. They're above the modes of nature. Or it is said like that. They're called liberated. They're liberated persons. So it's true. Yeah, it's possible that they're free. Some of them may have desires for merging, though, depending on the individual. But they don't have, let us say, at least they don't have any gross desires for enjoyment. And as they get higher up, they're more pure. When they go to Satyalok, then they're just making offerings to Lord Vishnu, who is residing there. Lord Vishnu wakes up, comes out from his room, sits on the, you know, yajna stali arena. They come, the Brahmins come, they chant mantras, they bring offerings. Lord Vishnu eats it all. The Brahmins feel happy. Oh, whatever, the yogis, whatever they call them, Mukta Purushas, they feel happy. Then the Lord smiles, he goes back into his room, goes back to sleep. Then later, they prepare more offerings. The Lord wakes up, comes out of his room, out to them. They offer again that mantra. And the Lord eats everything. Then he goes back into his room, goes to sleep. They feel very happy. They start making new offerings. Like this. Chapan Boga. Then he wakes up, comes out, he eats again. He goes back to sleep. That's all he does. But it's kind of almost like our deity worship, you know. Like the Lord, we open the curtain, we feed him, we do our tea, we put him, then we close the curtain, he goes to sleep, and like we wake, ring the bell, wake him up. Oh, it's like that. That's what they're doing now. It's very similar to what we're doing. And Lord Vishnu is directly there. Because they see him eating it, and they directly see his beautiful form, forearms.
So they're devotees at home.
Yeah, they're devotees. Huh?
Official.
Huh?
Official.
Officials.
Without love.
Without love. Well, the love is hampered by all the opulence. It's hindered. It's not very intimate. And they don't get, you know, that's the only thing they see of him. They don't cuddle him like a mother. They don't even embrace him like a friend. And they certainly don't dance with him or embrace and kiss him more like that. It's very much like Shanta, what they're doing some service with Dasaras. Yeah, they're devotees. And so the other ones, on the other planets, they're doing meditation on the Lord. And they may, generally they're meditating on the Paramatma. So that's more like Shanta. So in Brahmaloka, at least there's some dasa there. That's also limited. So yeah, they get, you know, without... On those other planets, there's no real bhakti with love, you know, but they're just sitting and just meditating. So they're getting, it's kind of, it's like an in-between Shanta Rasa and just yogis. Yeah, meditating. Okay, we'll stop now. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Okay.